This is Toronto Rock Total Access on TSN 1050. Everything you need to know about the six-time NLL champions, Toronto Rock. Now, here's your host, Mike Hancock.
Well, we're just about in the same spot we were last week, Rock fans. Still nothing in the win column, but a pair of losses to the Rochester Nighthawks have shipped the Rock to the bottom of the standings. Don't despair, though, Rock fans. There's nothing like a matchup with the Bandits to change all that. And Saturday night in Buffalo, it's going down. Another great lineup for week two of the show. Brian Shanahan from the NLL on TSN and IsleIndoor.com. He'll be here to chat about last weekend's games and also a bit about his power rankings and what he believes might be a first for him. Rock transition player Brody Merrill will stop by, as will Steve Rapp from Sports Interaction to give us his picks coming up this week. And also our good friend Bud Bailey from the Buffalo News will help us tee up this Saturday night's big Rock Bandits matchup. But starting things off, it's the head coach of the Toronto Rock, John Lovell. Hello, Coach. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Mike.
All right, so a pair of losses to the Nighthawks dropped the Rock to 0-3. But before we dive into what happened, maybe just tell us what the temperature of things are right now around the Rock and just the general feeling of where this team really sits after three losses to start the season.
I think we're not happy with being 0-3, but I like the feeling in our dressing room after the game on Saturday night. I think in a lot of ways we've turned a corner in the way we've played. We didn't play particularly well in the first two games, but I thought we played well in game three in Rochester, and we played hard. There was a commitment to do the right things, and we just didn't get the results we wanted, but we certainly played the way that I expect us to play, and I think the feeling within the group was pretty good, actually. So I'm looking forward to our practice Tuesday night and our next game.
Now, when we talk about the feeling, 7-2 at the half in both games, Thursday and Saturday night, but would it be safe to say that the feeling maybe after 30 minutes was a little bit different in each game?
Well, like I said, I thought we did everything we wanted to do in the first half of the game on Saturday night. We generated the things that we wanted to do. The ball just wasn't falling for us. We played very hard defensively, and we weren't able to kill penalties. And unfortunately, I think we took some bad penalties at the end of the half there, at the end of the second quarter, and one of them's on me. And the game got away from us a little bit, but we didn't stop playing. We didn't give up, and we still tried to do the things that we wanted to do. The ball just isn't falling for us right now.
Now, like you mentioned in your post-game comments after the game on Saturday night, you were critical of the major that was handed out to Brett Hickey, and then also, you shouldered some of the blame yourself for the bench minor that you took. Now that you've had the chance to watch the tape here and review the game a little bit, do you still feel the same way about the call, or maybe just talk about?
Well, I haven't reviewed the tape of our game because there was other games that I needed to watch to get ready for the for Buffalo, so I will watch our game before practice on Tuesday. So I don't care what it shows on the tape. It's an unfortunate time for somebody to be handed out a major penalty. Their job is to do the game, not to become fan favorites in another team's building. And I just didn't like what was called there.
All right, now in terms of the lineup on Saturday night, Casey Bearns and Luke Magden pulled from the lineup, and you inserted Brad Cree and Glenn Bryan. Maybe how did you come to that decision to make that move on Saturday?
Well, Glennie and Brad have both played hard throughout. Glennie in particular throughout training camp, and Brad has come in here and he gives us some size and some speed, and we needed to do a little change in our lineup, and we wanted to run with just six old guys and 10 in the back end. And Casey struggled a little bit, so we wanted to see what our offense looked like with three rights without Casey Bearns. And he, like I say, I was happy with our offense, but Dan Lintner is going to be a great player. He had opportunities, but he didn't put them in the net. If Casey Behrens had those opportunities, I'm sure he would have, because that's what he does. And, you know, Casey will be playing again this weekend. At this point, we're still a work in progress. We're working to find our chemistry. We've got two young guys, and it's a tough struggle for those guys. Rob Hillier took, you know, 3 or 4 years to establish himself as a solid offensive player in this league, and so we have to be patient with players like Turner Evans and Dan Lintner, and down the road they're going to be good players too.
Now, when we continue to talk about the offense a little bit here, Colin Doyle came into the game with no goals on 19 shots through his first couple of games, but got off the schneid with a pair in the first half. Was this his best game so far of the season?
By far. He played hard throughout the game. He showed some great leadership in terms of how you should play the game. He was still pushing right to the end of the game. So he put in his 60 minutes, and that's what we need from all our guys up front, and that's what we need from all our guys from the back end.
We're currently chatting with Toronto Rock head coach John Lovell, and, obviously with so much success last year and realizing that when you do go all the way to the finals, it means a good six-month-plus commitment to this team. Sometimes people talk about a hangover effect from a great season, whether you win or lose, and you know, based on the fact you play so long and you realize it's a long road to get back there. Do you see any of that hanging around right now?
Well, I just think that, you know, there were some downers for our team to start the season. Not having Damon Edwards, who's one of our top defenders and a great transition guy to start the season. Josh announcing that he's not going to play, you know, partway into training camp was a little bit of a downer for our team. You know, we acquired a good defender in the back end, and then he doesn't show up for camp to try out. So those things that when we addressed some of our needs and you know, then we're faced with making some decisions that we didn't think we were going to have to make, all those things have had a little bit of effect on us. And, you know, I think we've just been slow getting started here in terms of building chemistry both in the back end and the front end. But, you know, we'll get it together because we have a good group, and I see a little bit more passion creeping into our game each time we play, and, more of a commitment to do the right things.
So we move ahead to this Saturday night's game in Buffalo, a Bandits team that is scoring a lot of goals. They're 1-1 coming into this weekend. They've had a couple of one-goal games that they've been involved in. But looking at this matchup coming into Saturday night and knowing that the offense has to put the ball in the net a little bit more often, what do you foresee coming up here in terms of getting things going? And I guess, and how do you kickstart the offense here on Saturday night?
Well, we just have to keep doing what we're doing and hope that our shots fall. Like, Buffalo is an outstanding transition team. They generate a lot of their offense from the back end, so, you know, they run at every opportunity, so we have to control that. And hopefully we can generate a little bit of our own. But, they've got some great offensive players in Dane Smith and Ryan Benesch, and the ball still runs through those guys a lot. And, we have to be solid defensively for sure, but we just can't allow them to run it well or we'll be in trouble.
All right, John, thanks a lot for joining us here. Obviously a big week coming up, but I guess you can say that about pretty much every week in the NLL. So good luck Saturday, and we'll chat soon.
Okay, Mike. Thanks, Drew.
That was John Lovell, the head coach of the Toronto Rock. Coming up in a moment on the show, we'll have Brody Merrill joining us. But first, let's not forget, The Rock will be back on home floor on Friday, January the 29th in another big East Division matchup when the Georgia Swarm are at Air Canada Centre. It's also student night presented by COBT Hammerheads. And students can get a $15 Upper Bowl seat only at TorontoRock.com. So students, check out that deal. It's almost 50% off at the end of the day, so a great deal, and it should be just a great game on Friday, January the 29th against the Swarm. Moving along on the program, Rock defender Brody Merrill joins us on the line now. Brody, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
All right, so obviously not the way anyone wanted to start the season, but probably also not the way anyone really envisioned this season beginning. Is there anything that you can point your finger at as to why there's been three games and three losses so far this season?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's one thing. You know, I think we had a successful year last year, and I think you know, I think the challenge for us is just to try to you know, continue that and build on that success, and as Coach Lovell has said, kind of push through that line. And you know, and I would say it was a pretty emotional year last year on many levels, and so for us it's just kind of starting fresh again and starting to build and get back to where we can be.
Now, this Rochester Nighthawks team that you guys played the last two outings, obviously one of the you know, perennial powerhouses in this league and one of the best teams in the NLL, and I think everybody thinks once again they'll be right there near the top of the standings. So you know, two tough games this last week, and especially here at the start of the schedule, there's a lot to talk about, but maybe let's just dive into Saturday night's game and that second quarter where things definitely didn't go the Rock's way. A 6-0 score in that 15-minute time period. What happened in that second period, in that second quarter, that seemed to kind of see things start to unravel?
Yeah, I'm not sure the exact timing of it, but I know we got a 5-minute penalty there. And again, you never want to make excuses and point to that one thing, but it was a bit of a turning point where I honestly had never seen that call been made before, and then they were able to get to 5-on-3, and then with their power play, they're pretty deadly in those situations. So that's where it kind of got away from us, I think, and we started you know, kind of chasing from there a little bit. I thought we had a good, you know, a pretty good start. There was a good feeling, you know, amongst the team, and you know, it was good pace to it. And you know, I thought we had some quality scoring chances too. That we just, whether it was hitting posts, or I thought Matt Vince was very good as well. So I think there's some things we can draw from that, and you know, perhaps a little bit unlucky, but we got to create our own breaks. And. And if, you know, penalties do arise, we need to do a little bit better job of killing those off.
Now, when you're out there, you know, as a player and a leader, and especially like you're saying, with all those shorthanded situations piling up, and you know that you're going to be out there on the floor trying to get the stop for the team, or trying to help get the stop for the team. What's it like out there for you on the floor, especially in a building that, you know, the fans are going nuts and you know that things are kind of starting to come off the rails a little bit. What do you have to do out there to try to keep things on the rails, and just what's it like for you out there in a situation like that as a player?
Yeah, you just try to stay in the moment as best as you can, and try to you know, simplify things, and you know, when the, you know, emotionally, when it starts to turn in the wrong direction, and it compounded by, you know, the momentum of the crowd, and you know, if they string a few goals together, you try not to play on your heels. You try to we always hear Coach Latasura say, you know, stay on our toes and try to dictate, and you know, but take a deep breath too, and just try to you know, focus on the next play, and you know, because the tendency, you know, could be to try to get it all back in one possession or one shift, and you end up working against yourself. So just try to simplify the game and stay in the moment as best you can.
Now, there's been some young guys inserted into the lineup this year. One of them is a rookie by the name of Luke Magnin, and he's someone that you coach at the Hill Academy. So what's that like now, playing alongside someone on the back end that you've coached?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting dynamic. Both rookies, him and Danny Littner, were at the Hill, and it's pretty neat, to be honest. Like, it's a lot of fun. The relationship changes a little bit, but it's I'm really, you know, I'm happy for those guys. I'm proud, they're great young players, and they belong. So it's just fun now to be teammates with them.
And what's it like, even on a broader scale? I mean, I know you mentioned that there's a lot of pride there for you in seeing these two guys, but, you know, there's a lot of players across the league that have come through the Hill Academy that are now playing as opponents, I guess, as well. But, you know, on the broader scale, what's that been like for you really over the last few years to see so many of these student athletes have success in the NLL?
Yeah, no, it's neat. I really noticed it just, I think, this year the most, just because there's quite a number of guys in the drafted and playing this year. So it's cool. For one, it's telling me I'm getting a little bit older in the game. But for two, it is neat to see. I still look at them, see them as when they were in high school, and now to see them progress and become young men and doing well at this level is really neat to see. They put a lot of hard work to get to this level, and it's really neat to see them realizing their dreams.
We're currently in conversation with Brody Merrill of the Toronto Rock. And Brody, a lot of fans have been talking about the absence of Josh Sanderson, especially with the results of these last couple of games. But what has it been like for you as a player going through something like this where, you know, at the start of training camp, you obviously had no reason to believe that Josh wouldn't be around. So, you know, having to deal with not having him in the lineup, what's it been like just adjusting to his absence both on and off the floor?
Yeah, it was a little surprising when he did make that decision. I was disappointed just because I really enjoyed being his teammate, and he's a great leader and was coming off such a great year. There's a lot of layers to his impact. Just his production and how he distributes on the floor and makes everyone better, and then also just the intensity and the leadership that he brings. So I think it was a little bit deflating, but, we try not to worry about, who's not in our locker room and just focus on who we do have in the locker room. We have a great team and, a lot of good pieces, a lot of leadership there that we just need to, we need to respond and step up and try to fill that void.
Now, you mentioned focus and moving ahead, and especially looking at this Saturday night in Buffalo, a big game, and maybe some people are looking for a turning point or hoping that this game is a turning point, but I almost start to think, it's almost time to maybe hit the reset button here on this season and maybe forget about these last three games. But how does the Toronto Rock refocus here at this point and kind of start to steer the ship in the right direction?
I think that's a good way to look at it. A bit of a fresh start here and you can play those games, those mental games where you're looking at your record and you're kind of analyzing other teams in the league and where you stand. And to be honest, it's really early. There's a lot of ebbs and flows to an 18 game season. So the way I look at it, in some ways, we don't like being 0-3, but we can kind of hit the reset button and you learn a lot too going through these little stretches, and you learn a lot about yourself and your team and where we need to improve and we got a good group, I think, that's going to respond to it and look to get better and get ourselves back on track.
Now, lastly, just to talk about the game in Buffalo more specifically, and just that atmosphere in Bandit Land, and it's always charged up, and sometimes things get a little bit wild. But, and especially last year, you were right in the center of it with a big bout with Steve Priolo there in the late seconds of a game down in Buffalo last year in the regular season. But what's the key to winning in that building, and kind of how do things need to unfold in terms of playing a road game in Buffalo?
Yeah, it's a difficult place to play for sure. But I think it's also exciting, though. Like, it's an exciting atmosphere to play in. I think for us, it's trying to, stay even keel and not ride those emotional waves that can happen in that building. But I think, I think playing there at this time is going to be good for us. It's not a hard building to get up for, you already have that kind of intrinsic motivation going into it, based on the atmosphere there and a division rival. So it's one of those early games that's our record notwithstanding, it's one of those early games that you might circle on your calendar because it's a big early test for us.
All right, thanks for joining us, Brody.
Okay, appreciate it.
That was Brody Merrill of the Toronto Rock. One of the all-time greats, really, that this game has ever seen. And, you know, when you think about it, it's just his second season in a Rock uniform. It seems almost, though, like he's been around for a lot longer. But also, if you're keeping your eye on things, the NLL recently named their top 30 players in the league's history, given that this is the 30th anniversary team, and Brody was on that list of top 30 players. So you know that he's a big part of this Toronto Rock team, and also, like I said just moments ago, they're one of the best that this game has ever seen. Coming up in a moment, we've got Steve Rapp from Sports Interaction, but just one more reminder that there are some other great Rock ticket packages available, including the Rock to 6 Ticket Flex Pack and the 4-Game Flex Pack, and both right now are available at TorontoRock.com. Joining me now on the program is Steve Rapp from Sports Interaction. Steve, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Good, Mike. I'm doing well, and I'm looking for a Rock to get off the schnei eventually here, but other than that, doing well.
I hear you. We're all waiting for that, and hopefully it comes this weekend. But let's start off with a bit of a betting intro to the lacrosse world. What type of wagers are available here?
Well, Sports Interaction puts up a lot for lacrosse. I mean, right now, early in the week, you'll get just a straight money line, which is basically like betting on any sport, who's going to win, and you have to either lay money or take money on the underdog for just straight up. But as the week goes along, we're going to get some alternate totals, total score. We're going to get handicaps by, you know, how many goals a team was going to win by. You're going to get halftime wagering, either wagering on the first half or the second half. Winning margins. There'll be lots of different ways. And when we're looking at games this week with only two games on the schedule, some of those handicap margins, winning margins might be the way to go.
All right, now for those people who missed last week's debut episode, Steve will be joining us each week on the show to give us a few picks. And this week, a pretty light schedule with just two games on the board. So let's start with, we'll call it the other game, Saturday's late game. Let's start with the undefeated Colorado Mammoth on the road at Vancouver. The Stealth scored a big upset victory over the Rush last weekend, even their record at 1-1. Can the Stealth continue to play giant killers here?
Well, that's a really good point, Mike. And that's why we're looking at a nice situation here with Vancouver coming home. As you say, after beating defending champion Rush and Saskatchewan, and they're going to be feeling pretty good about themselves. Remember, this is an expansion team that just the game before got clobbered by New England 17-7. So this is a good situation for us. Colorado 3-0, going to get a Stealth team heading home, reading their own press clippings. Didn't show anything in that first home game. We just mentioned 17-7, not a good score. Mammoth coming off a huge overtime win against Buffalo. And they're going to be playing their first game of the season back in the division. Adam Jones is scoring. Callum Crawford is setting them up. And I like Colorado to win easy and go 4-0 on the season. So you're going to tread lightly here, Mike, because this one is Colorado -2.5, -250. So you'd have to lay $2.50 to win a dollar on Colorado. So this is where you might want to wait till later in the week when Sports Interaction puts up some winning margins. And maybe look for better odds by playing Colorado to win by one goal or two goals and not lay as much money.
Now that brings us to the Toronto Rock and the Buffalo Bandits. The Rock obviously struggling mightily right now, 0-3 out of the gate. A couple of tough losses to the Rochester Nighthawks last week. But this is a big old rivalry game here as we go into First Niagara Center on Saturday night. You know, we're probably nearing must-win territory for the Rock at the same time.
We're nearing must win, and Buffalo's -$1.89, so you're going to lay $1.89 to win a dollar on this one. And you just mentioned it, Rock are in some trouble right now. You know it, your listeners are well aware of it. They can't score, and they really can't defend right now. This is something they're going to really have to correct in a hurry. It's not going to get much easier here. They play a Buffalo Bandit team coming off a tough overtime loss to the aforementioned Mammoth at home. They lost 15-14 in overtime. And unfortunately, Mike, until we can see some scoring touch from the Rock, we're going to have to fade them, especially here on the road against a decent Bandit team. It hurts me to say so on the Toronto Rock radio show, but, you know, the trend is a trend. And until they get a win, we can't really put our money behind them. So we're going to, if we're handicapping and when you're betting, you bet with your head, not with your heart. So we're going to say Buffalo -$1.89 to beat Toronto, and hopefully that we're wrong.
All right, Steve. Well, I'm sure everybody out there listening appreciates the honesty in those picks as well. And thanks for joining us, and we'll do this again next week.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Enjoy the week.
All right, that was Steve Rapp from Sports Interaction. This segment is brought to you by Sports Interaction. Betting lines are available on all Rock games as well as major sporting events. Established in 1997 and licensed and regulated in Canada and Jersey, Sports Interaction is a proud sponsor of the Toronto Rock. So a lot of fun there with Steve, and as we mentioned, we'll be doing this every week on the show here on Toronto Rock Total Access. It's time for a short break on the show and a SportsCenter update, but on the other side, we've got Brian Shanahan from the NLL on TSN, as well as Bud Bailey from the Buffalo News, all coming up here on Toronto Rock Total Access on TSN 1050. Welcome back to Toronto Rock Total Access. I am Mike Hancock, and before we jump back into things, don't forget the Rock's next home game is Student Night, presented by COBT Hammerheads. Students, by going to torontorock.com, you can get a $15 Upper Bowl seat for the game against the Georgia Swarm on Friday, January the 29th at Air Canada Centre. This weekend, though, we've got the Buffalo Bandits coming up on the schedule for the Toronto Rock at Buffalo's First Niagara Centre, and here to set the scene for this traditionally volatile affair, it's a good friend of the show, Bud Bailey from the Buffalo News. Bud, Happy New Year, and welcome back to the show.
Same to you, Mike. You know, it's funny you mentioned volatile. I was thinking that of all the teams in the league, I think Buffalo has had more problems with Toronto over the years than anybody. It kind of went down when Darius Kilgore left, but Troy Cordingley still likes beating Toronto.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always a little something extra on the line, no matter what the storyline. But this year in Buffalo, definitely a year of change, namely the retirement of John Tavares, you know, his move from player to coach. So let's start, though, with his retirement. And, you know, when last season ended, did you think that there was any chance JT would come back, you know, one more time? I guess it's a question that's probably been asked maybe for the last decade if he's going to come back one more time. But what were your kind of thoughts at the end of last season? Did you think we'd see JT back on the floor?
I thought it was less than 50-50, but to be honest with you, I thought the year he would retire was the year before, because he had really struggled with the calf, and I don't think he finished the season healthy and seemed kind of discouraged and leaning that way. And he said he was kind of, if the decision had been made in July, he probably would have retired. But he came back and, you know, had more injury problems, but still finished pretty strong. I think he had like 4 or 5 assists in the one playoff game and scored a few goals in the last regular season games. And it's like, well, if he wants to be, you know, just a contributor or whatever and play at that level, he could probably still do it for another year. But clearly he wasn't, you know, making the impact that he, you know, had when even when he was 40, when he was tied for the league-leading goals, which is still pretty impressive when you think about it. So, yeah, I guess I wasn't stunned, but maybe a little surprised.
Now, as a coach, now making the move from player to coach, now being an assistant coach on the bench with Troy Cordingley, what do you see him bringing to Troy Cordingley's bench as an assistant?
Well, obviously the voice of authority is the biggest thing. John Tavares seems to be considered generally as the greatest player in league history and maybe the sports history. And when he says, you know, you should be doing it this way, I think everybody has to listen, and not just 20-somethings just out of college. I think, you know, anybody in the roster from Mark Stainhouse at 35 on down. When John says something, I think you really have to listen and take it into consideration. Not that Dan Teat didn't have some authority as well, but maybe coming from John, it might have a little more of an impact. And he was always such a darn smart player throughout his career. You know, he had some physical ability, but maybe not the complete extent, but he got by on smart so long, and it'll be interesting to see how he makes the adjustment from being just one of the guys on the field to something of a leader now, a louder voice in the locker room, because it doesn't sound like he did that much of the rah-rah stuff while he was a player. So he knows he's got to step up that a little bit as an assistant coach, and we'll see how that works.
Well, I don't know if this has been his influence so far this season, but this Buffalo team has been pretty entertaining to watch, a pair of one-goal games so far. What do you make of their start overall?
And I wrote about this, in fact, in today's newspaper, that the Colorado game was really a missed opportunity, because the season is almost defined by how the Bandits are going to do against Rochester and Toronto, and we can get into the Rock's problems in a second offensively. But with the Rock already with a couple losses, if Buffalo beats Colorado, it's two games up and then playing Toronto this week, and with a chance to go three up in three games, and boy, that would be a huge step forward. Instead, and it was a very even game out in Colorado, just nothing to choose between them, and Colorado winds up getting the last shot that goes in the game. So 1-1, not bad against Calgary and Colorado, and Colorado's obviously 3-0 and playing well, but I think there's a little bit of what might have been after all this. Troy was a little upset with the way the offense has played at times. It didn't look overly sharp in New England in the Calgary game, but still came out with a win. And even though the goals were going in, he wasn't too happy with the way the team was playing, and probably in relation to the opposition. So there's certainly room for improvement there. But, you know, 1-1, it could be worse. It's, you know, Calgary has obviously retooled, but is a pretty good team, and Colorado looks good. So, you know, 500 is 500.
Yeah, you know, we talked about the absence of John Tavares, and you look at Daryl Veltman coming over via free agency from the Calgary Roughnecks in the offseason. Daryl didn't play on Saturday night in Colorado, but how do you see him fitting in as a complementary piece behind the big guys like Dane Smith, Ryan Benesch, and Mark Stainhouse? And what do you kind of expect out of a guy like Veltman this year?
Yeah, I didn't get an explanation of why Veltman was out. He might have been a little dinged up a little bit, but I think he's a guy who's played with guys like Evans out in Calgary, and they obviously had some good people, and he was a good complimentary piece there, and always seemed to have good games against the Bandits. So he comes into Buffalo. They've already got Dane Smith and Benesch and Stainhouse, who are big weapons. So he can come in and set some picks and kind of clean up things and get the odd goal. And I thought he was a really good acquisition for what they needed at this point, just another good player to come in and do the job. So I would think we'll be seeing a lot of him going forward in the course of the season.
Now, when we shift the attention to the goaltender's crease, Anthony Cosmo, of course, is back for another season. Does he still have it in him, do you think, to give the Bandits that championship-caliber goaltending that you need to succeed in this league?
Well, that's a kind of a season-defining question as well, Mike. I think that Anthony has slipped after a really good year 2 years ago. Last year, he was really right in the middle of all the stats, and I think that was fair. Wasn't great, wasn't horrible, and you'd kind of like to have him better. Now, he is something like 38, and when you're 38 and you slip a little, it's no longer just, oh, he had a bad year. It's like, well, is he getting old? Goalies can last a little longer than position players, John Tavares notwithstanding, but I think he's got to pick up his game a little bit if the Bandits are going to make some noise. I think he's about 100 saves away from the all-time league record for saves in a career, 101, I believe, behind Watson. So that'll be something I'll have to keep an eye on for the next couple of weeks.
We're currently in conversation with Bud Bailey from the Buffalo News. And Bud, this is Troy Cordingley's third season behind the bench in Buffalo, and Steve Dietrich has been in Buffalo a couple of years longer as the general manager. Where do these guys sit in terms of their future beyond this year when either the success or failure, I guess, of this season is measured?
Well, Steve talked before the season that he was pretty much standing pat, and if the team didn't win, changes would be coming, and he did not let himself out or Troy out. I think Buffalo is certainly an interesting situation because it does draw so well, and there is some pressure to win, and the Bandits have not won a league championship since 2008 and only one since 1996, and when you think of the advantages Buffalo has in terms of finances and location in the league, because some of the best players obviously come from the Toronto and Ontario regions, Buffalo, in theory, should win more often than that. It's been close several times, but hasn't been able to get off over the hump too often. So, yeah, there's certainly a little pressure on both of them to get going. But on the other hand, they did have a pretty good regular season last year. They just couldn't get by Rochester in the first round of the playoffs, and that's going to be a key factor this year. If they go out in the first round again, or worse yet, miss the playoffs, then you know, all bets are off, and I think the front office staff, the coach and GM know that. But the two of them seem pretty comfortable together. Steve and Troy have known each other for a long time. I don't know if they played together in Buffalo, but certainly they were on each other's coaching staffs and what have you over the years, and seem to be on the same page of what's going on. So in that sense, you wouldn't see any reason for a change in that way. It would be results-oriented, and it's just a matter of patience, and the Bandits have certainly shown a lot of patience in that regard over the years, unless things have gone really badly.
Now, like we've talked about, the Bandits are even at 1-1 coming into this home game against the struggling Toronto Rock. From the Buffalo perspective, though, do the struggles of the Rock worry you, or do they give you a shot of confidence maybe going into Saturday's game? Or like I said, is there some worry that maybe this is going to be the week things are going to come together for the Rock?
Yeah, I mean, we all know Toronto's capable of a lot of things, and the lack of offense has been pretty startling. I've only seen the box scores. I haven't been able to watch the games, but there's talent there, and you know it's played, and you're just kind of sitting there waiting for the alarm clock to go off. So I guess everyone with the Bandits will be tiptoeing around before the game, just saying, "Oh, let's let them sleep a little more. Just, you know, one more game would be nice." But pretty clearly, there's too much there to go on indefinitely, and if there isn't, then you got to look at, you know, what the heck's going on with a team like that, and that's true of any team, I'm sure, that struggles like that. You just got to say, well, do we need to change a complementary piece and try to get things going? Is there something we can identify and take it from there?
All right, Bud, to wrap up here, we'll play the win-if game. Tell us the Bandits win-if and the Rock win-if.
Well, I would think that it all comes down to offense. If Toronto only scores 5 or 6 goals, the Bandits can get that number pretty easily. Pretty clearly, Toronto has to get the offense going in this one. If it doesn't, it's going to lose a third game because the Bandits have been a little tough to outscore. And if Buffalo can come up with any sort of effort and keep the Rock offense contained, it should win the game. So I think that's got to be the key factor going in right now.
All right, Bud, thanks a lot for joining us. We look forward to seeing you at First Niagara Center on Saturday night. And, buddy, the press box popcorn is on you this week.
As usual, sign my name to the bill.
All righty. That was Bud Bailey of the Buffalo News. When we come back on the other side, we'll have Brian Shanahan from the NLL on TSN and, of course, also from ILIndoor.com. More to come on Toronto Rock Total Access here on TSN 1050.
Now the strip's about to kick off. This party looks whack. Let's take it back to straight hip-hop and start it from scratch. I'm about to bloody this jack up. Everybody get back. That's why my pin needs a pad, because my rhyme's on the red tag. It's like I did.
Right now, purchase, finance a 2015 Mitsubishi RVR all-wheel control for 0% for 84 months and get up to $1,000 off, plus a set of no-charge winter tires. With the RVR's all-wheel control system, you'll get the type of handling to give you confidence behind the wheel no matter the weather. On approved credit, conditions apply. Go to gtamitsubishi.ca for details or visit your Toronto area Mitsubishi dealers, proud sponsors of the Toronto Rock. Mitsubishi, built better, back better. Welcome back to Toronto Rock Total Access. A week on the road here is followed by a home game for the Rock next weekend. Friday, January the 29th is Student Night presented by COBT Hammerheads. Students can get a $15 Upper Bowl ticket only at TorontoRock.com. Back to business here on Toronto Rock Total Access. Here to chat with us from the NLL on TSN and IsleIndoor.com is Brian Shanahan. How are you doing today, Shanny?
Not too bad, Mike. I got a bit of a cold, but I'm chugging through it.
All right, well, let's talk power rankings right off the top here. Where did the Rock land this week? And we'll say, did they make power rankings history with where they sit?
Yes, well, they probably did, because I don't remember. They are at the bottom of the power rankings, and really I don't remember the last time they've been there, and if they've ever been there, doing the power rankings. But at 0-3, I think it was an obvious pick, too. I mean, there's no other team that's sitting there at 0-3 right now, and the Rock deserve that spot right now.
So if we flip things to the other end of the spectrum here, who's on top, and do you see them staying there for a while?
Colorado's on top right now, and it's well-earned. They're 3-0. They've all been relatively close games, high-scoring games. Colorado's, unlike the Rock, Colorado's had no problem putting the ball in the net. They've had 15 goals this week in a 15-14 win and a couple of 16-goal games. But two of their three wins have been in overtime. I expect things to balance out. I don't think they're going to set any kind of records with wins, even though they're 3-0 to start. But I still think, despite the loss on the weekend by Saskatchewan, I think they're going to be the team at the top near the end of the year. But right now, Colorado 3-0 is deserving the top spot.
Now, you do mention the Rush there, and of course, going into this past weekend, the Rush and the Stealth getting together, and probably everyone had the Rush fairly heavily favored going into that game, especially the way the Stealth lost in week one. But I guess that the result of that game just speaks to how much parity that there is in this league right now, and the fact that anyone can beat anyone.
No, there sure is, and I said in my power rankings, I would have bet anybody any amount of money that Saskatchewan was going to win that game. When they were up 11-8 going into the fourth quarter. And that's not a team that blows a lead too often. And as you said, especially, to Vancouver, who's coming off a bad game, they showed a lot of effort in the game against Saskatchewan, but I thought they're done. That's it. Saskatchewan's going to, maybe expand this lead, but they're going to win the game. And I was shocked that, Vancouver coming out with five straight goals, four of them by Corey Small. And they shut out Saskatchewan in the fourth quarter to take that win. So you're right. That just shows. And I think it's a lesson for the fans in Saskatchewan, probably most of them seeing their first pro game, how much, what happens in lacrosse. They saw some great goals, hits, fights even, but they also saw how momentum can suddenly change in a lacrosse game, and that's what happened to Saskatchewan, giving Vancouver a big and much-needed win.
Well, speaking of momentum, the Rock need to start building some, and also you mentioned a much-needed win. We're getting close to that must-win situation, I think, going into this weekend. But before we get too far into what's coming up, what do you make of this start so far for the Toronto Rock this season?
It's pretty easy to point the finger on what's wrong so far. It's just that the offense is not working, and it's baffling because they are not that much different from, the offense that was probably the best offense in the NLL for most of last year. Now, granted, losing Josh Sanderson, we can't say enough about that. I mean, Josh Sanderson has been one of the top setup men in the NLL his whole career. But so is, Colin Doyle. Colin Doyle's a great quarterback. He's been an MVP many times. So I think a lot of people, and myself included, felt that losing Josh would hurt, but Colin Doyle will closely, he might not make up for it, but it'll be close. He's not the exact same style as Josh, but he is a great quarterback. But for whatever reason, the chemistry's not there. I'm not blaming Colin Doyle at all. It's the whole unit. The whole unit is not finding any chemistry right now, and really the only goals they're scoring are on the outside shots, and you're not going to win a game solely on outside shot goals, and that's a problem right now. I don't see any kind of penetration offensively, and I don't see the ball movement we've seen last year. So it's a work in progress. I have confidence that they will turn it around, and they really have to, because three losses against Eastern opponents and three more games coming up against Eastern opponents, they have to turn it around now, or they'll be looking at a spot outside of the playoffs.
We're currently chatting with Brian Shanahan. And Shanny, when situations like this arise and the offense is struggling, obviously, you start to think about doing a little bit of tinkering. And on Saturday night, Casey Behrens came out of the lineup and the Rock went back to playing with 6-10. And then you've also got Kevin Ross, who's pretty close to coming back. And, there is still that if down the road that maybe Josh Sanderson does come back sometime this year. But what's the best mix right now for the Rock on offense? Maybe we'll take Josh Sanderson completely out of the equation, but add Kevin Ross back into the mix here probably sometime over the next couple of weeks. And, what do you do? Who are the six guys you go with? Do you take Turner Evans out of the lineup? Is it LeBlanc? Is it Doyle? Who, are you taking out if you're putting Kevin Ross in?
Well, I think if you're putting Kevin Ross in, you've got to take Turner Evans out. And I think Evans is going to be a great player. He's got the Evans bloodlines, and I've I've seen nothing wrong with his game so far. He hustles. I mean, he hasn't been putting the ball in the net, but neither has anybody really consistently. But so that's not a fault in him. I just think that based on what Kevin Ross did last year, you know, he helped that offense. So I think that's something you have to try. I like Casey Behrens on the other side. I would be keeping him in the lineup. But obviously, I'm biased to what I saw last year. So, you know, the two moves I've just suggested is basically trying to bring that offense back to what the offense was last year, other than, you know, minus Josh Anderson for Colin Doyle. And I've always thought they perform better when they have 6-10 rather than 7-9. I think the six guys, you know, most teams, and especially the Rock, I think will agree that that's a number that's usually worked better for them, for their chemistry. So I think you got to go with 6-10, and that would be probably what I'd try. But I'm, you know, not saying that that will be a solution right away, but I think that's the direction I'd be trying to go.
So on the goaltending side of things, you know, like we say, it's also been pretty good. Brandon Miller was pretty good on Saturday night, given the situation he was facing with all those power plays, especially, like you mentioned, last year, very much a platoon system in the Rock net with Miller and Rose almost getting an equal amount of playing time, with Miller kind of being the guy that the Rock go to more so in the playoffs. But Are you okay with a platoon system here? And also, who do you think gets in the net on Saturday night, or who should be in the net on Saturday night?
Yes, I am okay with the platoon system, and I kind of agree with what you said. I think Miller maybe has the edge over Nick Rose. Going in this Saturday night, that's a tough call. I'm not sure if I would go with Miller or give Rose a try after Miller's going to play the last couple of games. Either way, I don't think that's going to be the difference, but You also, you know, when you're going through a slump, you'd also love to see a game where your goalie is the first star of the game. The goalies have not lost any games for the Rock, but they haven't stood on their heads either. And you know, maybe now they need one of those games where the goaltender makes the difference. And I think both Brandon Miller and Nick Rose are capable of those type of games. But, you know, you start looking at all kinds of things when you're in a slump and you need a great, you know, game from your goaltending. You need the offense improved, and you need the defense to be, you know, A plus, not just B. So I don't want to put all the pressure on the goaltenders, but they're going to need a good game on Saturday, especially against that offense of the Buffalo Bandits.
So this brings us to the million-dollar question to wrap things up here, Shanny. Do the Rock get their first win on Saturday night in Buffalo?
You know, I really think they will. They've always played well in Buffalo, and surprisingly, you know, they've had such a great rivalry between Buffalo and Toronto, and surprisingly, the visiting team has always performed better. Or both teams have better records on the road than they do at home against each other. So, I'm, you know, taking that into account, and you know, and I just think it's got to turn the Rocks' favor sooner or later. And you know, what better night than to do it in Buffalo in front of all those crazy Buffalo Bandits fans.
All right, Shanny. Well, let's hope you're right, and we will do this again next week. Thanks for stopping by.
Excellent. Thanks, Mike. Take care.
All right. That was Brian Shanahan from the NLL on TSN and IslIndoor.com. Now, before we wrap things up on Toronto Rock Total Access, I have to remind everyone about Student Night, presented by COBT Hammerheads on Friday, January 29th at Air Canada Centre against the Georgia Swarm. Students, you can get a $15 Upper Bowl ticket only when you visit TorontoRock.com. What a great deal for that game on the 29th. Now, also after each and every Rock home game, you can join the Rock players and cheerleaders at Shoeless Joe's at 276 King Street West. It's the home of the Toronto Rock post-game party for 2016. Shoeless Joe's is located at the corner of King Street West and Duncan Street. And Rock fans, you can head to Shoeless Joe's before each and every home game and get 15% off your meal. It's your chance to meet the Toronto Rock players and cheerleaders at the post-game party. I have to thank my guests on this week's show, John Lovell, Brody Merrill, Steve Rapp, Bud Bailey, and Brian Shanahan. In the meantime, and in between time, this has been another edition of Toronto Rock Total Access. I'm Mike Hancock, and we'll chat next week.
You've been listening to Toronto Rock Total Access on TSN 1050. For the best ticket in town, visit TorontoRock.com. And be sure to follow The Rock on Twitter at Toronto Rock LAX. Stop the rock.